This is Emergency Medicine Match Advice, sponsored by Academic Life and Emergency Medicine, a podcast series designed to help medical students and residents strategically navigate the process of applying for residency in emergency medicine or to EM-sponsored fellowship programs. I'm your host, Mike Gisanti from Stanford University. Let's get started. Welcome to Emergency Medicine Match Advice, a Google Hangout web series sponsored by Academic Life and Emergency Medicine, and its editor-in-chief, the 2017, catch this, International Residency Educator of the Year, Dr. Michelle Lin from the University of California, San Francisco. Woo!
Thank you. They get the tiara. It is on its way, apparently, and the little sash and everything.
We are not worthy. You know, world, I got to have lunch with her a week or two ago, and now I'm like, she even knows my name? Like, this is International Residency Educator.
You are picking up the check, my friend. Picking up the check.
What? So that's a big deal. But we have an even bigger deal for you, folks. We have a rock star panel, all-star panel, of program directors from Northern California. We're back with a slightly different format for our discussion today. This is EM Match Advice for the Northern California programs. Do you want to come join us in sunny Northern California? Well, today's the day to figure out how to do that. So in this episode, we're going to do a deep dive into one region of the country, tell you a lot about the state of the programs there, but also dispel some myths for students who are interested in applying to these programs, but perhaps are reticent to do so. And yes, I did just relocate to this area. That's not why I picked it first. Promise you, some other folks asked me to do a Northern California episode, so we were asked and we did it. So if you're a program director who's interested in a similar showcase of programs in your region of the country, shoot us an email and we can talk, and I'm sure that we can fit that in. So to offer their sage advice on the programs in Northern California are the program directors themselves, Dr. David Barnes from UC Davis.
Hi, Mike.
Dr. Christopher Fee from UCSF.
Happy to be here, Mike.
Thanks, Chris. Dr. Stacy Soddle from UCSF Fresno. UCSF gets two programs, apparently, Stacy. Nice to have you here. Dr. Sarah Williams from Stanford Kaiser, two doors down from me in the office right now.
Hello.
And from across the bay, Dr. Charlotte Wills from Highland General Hospital. We've got a lot of panelists on today's episode, so we're going to go right to the discussion. And let's jump into it with Dr. David Barnes from University of California, Davis. Tell us a bit about what makes your program special.
Thanks, Michelle and Mike, for having me. This is really a great opportunity, I think, for all of us. All the programs in Northern California are awesome, so it's hard to distill what sets us apart from other awesome programs, but I'm going to give it a shot. Probably dating myself for a little bit, but the first thing I would say is that we are kind of like the mall of inland Northern California, the clinical mall. For those of you who don't know what a mall is, it's where people used to go to shop and find things like Radio Shack and other things. So we're the clinical mall for inland Northern California. We are the only academic medical center. We're the only level one trauma center, the only burn center, the only poison control center, one of four in California. We're one of five American College of Surgeons verified surgery centers for pediatrics, one of five in the country and the only one in California. We have an interesting patient mix. We're not a county hospital, but we are the de facto county hospital. We serve a disproportionate share of the medically indigent patients in our community, despite being a truly academic medical center. So we get to have all the great resources of the academic center, but we also get to serve some of the most vulnerable patients in our community. And the last thing is we're the only three-year program in Northern California. So that sets us apart a little bit. I would add to that a few other items. Number one, we have a diverse clinical site training model. So in addition to UC Davis, we also have about 25 to 30% of our rotations in the Kaiser system here in Sacramento. We added the Northern California VA into our clinical lineup this year, and we have plans to add a community hospital, Mercy San Juan, which is a CEP site in 2019. So sort of a four-legged stool for clinical training, if you will. We are an integrated program. We started a partnership with the Air Force this last year. We have five Air Force residents in our program. Two are active duty and three come through a civilian-sponsored scholarship-type program. And we have two active military emergency physicians in as not only awesome clinicians, but they are fantastic educators as well. So it's a really a great partnership that we have with them. We pride ourselves on an innovative education model. We do some seat time, but we've tried to get out of the death by PowerPoint that we all kind of despise. We do a lot of simulation. We do a lot of procedure training. We do a lot of hands-on case-based learning. We have a longitudinal quality improvement and patient safety curriculum where residents actually are responsible for developing and carrying out a full quality improvement project during their residency training. And even though we don't require research, we have world-class researchers who mentor residents who do elect to go that pathway. And we're one of the top five funded academic programs for NIH funding in the country. The last thing I would say about UC Davis is that we really pride ourselves on our culture here. And that is a culture of diversity, a culture of a city that is fantastic in terms of its people and what it offers the people who live here, and our culture of wellness that supports resident well-being. And hopefully a lifelong career, a sustainable career in emergency medicine. Our residents, our faculty, our staff come from all different backgrounds. They have whole different belief systems, different races, different lifestyles. And that's something that we really embrace.
Well, dang, Dave, it makes me want to almost do residency again. What is going on? Yeah, I agree. Check it out. I echo the same comments about, like, your faculty there are amazing. But while we have you, a captive audience, because I feel like all of you guys are such experts, I want to toss a question your way, maybe something across the board that would help all the students, which is, you know, what is something that you look for in a student's application? Like, is it now number one on your list, the standardized video interview score? Is it where they were born? I mean, what is the star thing you're looking for in their application?
You know, if I had to separate the interview away from the application, because I'm a big believer that the in-person interview is really the dominant driver. It's who that person is. It's the intangibles that don't come out on paper that we're really looking for. But if I had to stick to just the application, just the packet, it would have to be the narrative on the SLOs. It's really how those applicants performed with our peers, with other emergency physicians who know what to look for successful applicants who are going to do well wherever they go, but who are going to do well, especially in the specialty of emergency medicine.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. Students, check it out. They're the closest ones to Tahoe. He didn't even mention that.
I would almost.
That was number six on my list.
It was. It got knocked off at the end when you went for your top five. I love it. All right. So let's hear Dr. Chris Fees tell me a little bit about the wonderful things going on at your program, UCSF San Francisco General.
Well, thanks, Mike and Michelle, for having me. This is a tough question to answer because there's so much going on over the last couple of years with our program. We've had, in the last 2 years, what is it, Michelle, two new hospitals open within our program. So about two and a half years ago, we opened a brand new hospital called Mission Bay, UCSF Mission Bay Benioff Children's Hospital, which has the only standalone freestanding pediatric emergency department in the city of San Francisco. And with that came the development, recruitment, and growth of an entire new division within our department, which has, of course, been a benefit to our residents, so an entire pediatric emergency medicine faculty where there was none before. And, of course, they are incredibly well-respected as educators within our department. It's been a very transformative, I think, last couple of years from that perspective. And then last year, the opening of the new facility at San Francisco General Hospital, and you may have heard of somebody named Zuckerberg. It's the Zuckerberg San Francisco General Emergency Department. Ironically, we're still on an outdated EMR. That's my dropping a hint to somebody who might be able to fix that problem for us. So again, another transformative experience. The ED, for those of you who haven't seen it, Zuckerberg is phenomenal. It's four times the square footage of the old ED, just to put that in perspective, which is fantastic for the patients in terms of having your own space, not having a bunch of hallway patients, et cetera. It's presented some challenges for us, of course, but those challenges have been met and exceeded by our residents, faculty, and staff. That's the clinical environment. We're rich in diversity, I think, within the clinical environment between having the UCSF Parnassus site, which is a tertiary or quaternary world-class facility, but also has its fair share of bread and butter emergency medicine, stroke center, STEMI center, et cetera, alongside 50-50 with the San Francisco General ED, which is the only trauma center in all of San Francisco and northern San Mateo County. And then, of course, now the addition of the new children's hospital. So I think clinical diversity has been phenomenal for us. Like Dave was mentioning at Davis, we do have an affiliation with the VA in San Francisco. I send our residents to Kaiser San Francisco, and then 1 month over at Children's Hospital in Oakland, which is now part of the UCSF family as well. So I think the patient care environments and diversity of patient types, ages, backgrounds, et cetera, like many of the programs in the Bay Area, really can't be beat. In addition to that, from a curriculum standpoint, Dave mentioned getting away from the 1 hour PowerPoints back to back to back where everybody is paying a lot of attention to their laptop, surfing, buying airplane tickets and clothing and all the other things that we do. We've tried to get away almost entirely from that, move to half hour blocks, move to as much hands-on as possible, small group instruction. We do cadaver labs multiple times a year for procedural training, lots of sim time. So anything to get people out of their chair where they can't focus on the screen. And I think we've been reasonably successful. And then finally, I'll just highlight a little bit about how we take advantage of the four-year structure in our program, which is like many four-year programs have tracks or minors or concentrations, whatever you want to, you know, semantic terminology you want to use to describe it. Ours are called areas of distinction. But the areas of distinction that we have allow our trainees to gain some niche expertise in an area that they may pursue, you know, choose to pursue additional training later, whether that's in fellowship or perhaps go straight into the community and take a leadership role within that area. And currently they are, let's see if I can pull all seven out of my head, ultrasound, medical education, EMS and disaster medicine, medical toxicology, health and society, research, and pediatric emergency medicine. I'm always impressed when I can name all seven without looking at anything. So I think we offer not only a diversity of patients, populations, and colleagues with whom we work, but also a good breadth of expertise within the faculty that helps support some of these niche specialty training areas if people want to do that.
Awesome, Chris. I am actually on a mission to rebrand our hospital at the Zuckerberg because you know how we call it the General. I'm gonna start calling it the Z and see what happens. Awesome. I mean, like the Zuckerberg got so much like baggage to it sometimes. I'm just gonna call it the Z. It's got a little tech feel. I'm running with it. But hey, since I'm gonna lob you a question, if that's okay, which is, you know, we have an extremely diverse, by every definition of the word, group of residents who come and match at our program. But like, what would you say is the ideal resident or the ideal profile of the resident who would be successful in our program? It's a tough question, but maybe you can kind of address that for us.
Well, I think that the beauty of it is there is no right answer to that. For sure, among the Bay Area programs, we are the newest, right? Our very first class started in 2008, graduated in 2012. And I think having that perspective, coming in, you know, residents coming in, brand new residents coming into a brand new program at an institution that is a powerhouse for a lot of other residencies, you know, internal medicine, surgery, et cetera. It was very clear from early on that we were attracting people who were really go-getters and leaders and were willing to, you know, kind of do the go where no man has gone before and take a chance. And I think we as a faculty, as a program, have really benefited from that. So I think the people who are successful in our program are willing to, A, take a chance, but B, to demonstrate their leadership and have know that their voice will be heard and that they have a real say in the direction in which the program is going. And we've been very fortunate to attract that type of applicant.
Yeah, I totally agree. Kind of the crazy, semi-crazy pioneers. Love it.
Yeah.
Well, I picked up on all the awesome things going down in Mission Bay. I mean, the hospitals are beautiful. The area is beautiful right by the ballpark. They're building tons of housing down there. I can only imagine how awesome it would be if you're a super rich resident and you could live in that housing. But it's really, it's remarkable. And I'm so glad to see that. So thanks so much, Chris V. We're going to get on to the other UCSF program. As I said, they have lots, apparently. We're going to hear from Dr. Stacy Soddle, program director there. Give us some insight into the unique features of UCSF Fresno.
Yes. Thanks for including Fresno in Northern California program, since we're, you know, right in the middle. It's kind of a tough call. I'm glad you went this way. Fresno is actually awesome. Well, hopefully we can talk about that, you know, throughout the interview, because, you know, it has a bad reputation, especially among Californians, as a place to live, but it's actually quite enjoyable. First thing, I just have to get that off the table, make sure we have time to address that today. So Fresno is an old, established program. We started in 1974. So we've had a long, you know, track record of graduating great EM doctors, and it's mostly because of the astounding clinical experience in Fresno. So there's not a lot of hospitals in town, and we have a lot of people from really diverse backgrounds that we take care of. So it's really a great intersection with both, you know, we see a lot of rural problems since we're the breadbasket of the United States. Some call us the Barcelona of California. I've heard that. I'm just kidding. Anyway, so we see rural problems, and we also see, you know, a lot of urban problems. So that's a great and unique combination for, you know, EM training. Also, since some people think Fresno is not a desirable place to live, there's really a lack of specialists in the Central Valley. So that really broadens the scope of practice for the EM resident. So our residents get to do procedures that most places you have to consult for, because there's a lot of other training programs in the institution. So that makes it just a really unique opportunity for EM residents to see a lot of different problems, then also, you know, take care of them, do the procedures yourself. It's a great setup for EM residency training. Another really unique thing about our curriculum is that we take advantage of doing off-service rotations throughout the 4 years. So I think it's really great as a resident to have the chance to go back to the MICU when you're a third year and you really know what matters to you as an EM doc, not just during your intern year, which you also do a MICU rotation, and you're kind of just learning to be a doctor for the first time your intern year. Our residents have a supervisory role in the MICU as a third year, and then they also go to the pediatric ICU in the fourth year as the senior resident and do some peds anesthesia during that time too. So it's a great opportunity to fine tune your skills on your way out the door when you know what's really important to you as an ER doctor. So that's something we pride ourselves in, having a curriculum that, you know, takes advantage of all of the expertise, you know, at our hospital.
Awesome, Stacey. I also want to echo the fact that every UCSF Fresno grad I have ever seen have been clinical superstars. I'm like, you have done how many of those procedures? And, you know, like, we have just seen maybe two. And so the diverse amount of experiences over at your program is just astounding. So kudos to your program. And I'm going to lob you a question here on our kind of wheel, the roulette here of questions, which is, you know, as someone who now does a lot of interviews, what's something that a student can do to shine and stand out in a good way during interview season?
I think it's important to be kind. You know, that's kind of obvious, but just be really kind, especially to the support staff. At our program, you know, the support staff definitely have the power to influence our rank list. So, you know, be kind to them. Another thing is to do your research about the program before you show up. Take some time, look at the curriculum, look at the website, come up with some questions. I think an applicant with some educated questions really stands out during the interview day.
Yeah, you know, Michelle paid you the compliment I was going to pay you. Everyone I've ever met from your program is a clinical superstar. Some great friends of Allium, Dr. Jeff Friedel and Dr. Ben Lee, and some other just amazing leaders in our specialty have come out of Fresno. Long story, beautiful history, and students should check it out. Students should also, if you're not in the fourth year, you should check out the away rotation at Fresno. Every student I've ever sent there has come back and said it was just outstanding. So kudos to you guys for that as well. So we're going to move two doors down the hall for me and hear from Dr. Sarah Williams, Program Director at Stanford Kaiser. And, you know, I've been away a long time, Sarah, so you can catch me up on the Stanford Kaiser program that made it special.
That's really funny because we've been at an all-day retreat today talking about strategy for our program kind of moving forward. So very exciting time for our department, for a residency program. We are kind of an old program and a new program. So for about a quarter century, we were a three-year residency program. A couple of years ago, we took a moment or a year, 2 years to reflect on the successes and the opportunities of potentially converting it to a four-year program. And, you know, when you've got a really successful three-year program in the Bay Area and things are going well, it's kind of it's a little scary to think about reinventing yourself. But we decided we were going to take the plunge, and it has been such a tremendously exciting time. What we did was we kept the parts of the program that were going really well, which were just this amazing academic center, this tertiary referral center, level one trauma center, specialty pediatric emergency department base here at Stanford. We also care for a huge number of our local underserved, which a lot of people don't realize, but we do. Right here at Stanford, we wanted to keep our incredible immersive county experience at Santa Clara Valley, which is actually the second busiest county hospital in the state of California. Sees well over 100,000 patients a year and is also a level one trauma center. We wanted to keep an immersive experience and a real deep experience at Kaiser, because that is really the way that American healthcare is moving to efficient care, patient-centered care in a cost-effective model. We thought it was very important that the residents really learn how to take care of patients in every single one of those environments. And we've kept that core structure. Stanford and the other sites have amazing off-service rotations, and we've really optimized where they do what to really kind of bring out the strengths. But what we realized over time, and you know, when I was an APD kind of having our meetings with the residents, was that there was all this opportunity around us for this 3 years. It was almost like being in a candy shop but not having the time to buy any candy. So many opportunities with global health, so many opportunities with medical education, ultrasound, critical care, you name it, and not enough time to really dive deep into that. And so we decided that we were going to transform into a four-year program. But I was darned if I was just going to repeat the third year. We went through and completely reinvented it and put in elective time throughout the 4 years. So now that we have 24 weeks, almost 6 months of integrated, individualized professional development time that we allow our residents to really decide for themselves what they need to do to become the leader that they want to be in emergency medicine. And we tailor it to each resident. As you can probably imagine, this has been an incredibly big project, but the number of our faculty that have dived into this, the amount of expertise that we've really brought into the program has been very exciting. So I would say that this is now one of the most exciting times to apply to our program. And our first two classes matched and they were amazing. And already I'm seeing it paying back dividends.
I love what you said about the program. I am a Stanford gal at heart, right? I went there for med school. I went there for college. I love the Cardinal. They're so awesome. And now that we have the mall over at Davis and Barcelona and Fresno, you are apparently the candy store.
We're the candy store.
I mean, who doesn't like candy? You might check out the Stanford program. Academic candy. How about that?
Academic candy. Absolutely.
Yes, but since we have this SAGE panel here, I'm going to lob you an expert question to you about interview season, because I think that's really what's on people's minds, at least right now at the end of September, which is as students go from program to program interviewing, how do they stay well, sane, alert and oriented times four, specifically like where am I as they go to so many programs? What advice do you have for them?
So it's a big question. Interview season is a very kind of terrifying prospect at the beginning, but what you'll find is that as you go through it, it starts to become fun. It will honestly start to become fun.
Are you serious?
But the ways it will actually happen is the first couple of interviews, you'll get your wiggles out and you'll start to realize and actually accept that you can do this and believe in yourself. And then you can start having fun with it. Start really using it as an opportunity to explore programs that you're really heavily considering. Try to group your programs geographically if you can, so that you can keep some of your expenses down. Now, most of us in this group have actually coordinated with each other so that we'll be sending out our invitations to interview on the same day. And that is so that you can be cognizant and clever about how you assign your interviews. So try to do that as much as you can, so you're not flying back and forth across the country. For the programs that you are really serious about, try to spend a little bit more time there. Get to know the residents a little bit more. Try to shadow in the emergency departments if you can. Perhaps bring your significant other, other people that are going to be stakeholders in your decision with you. If not during the interview, then for your second look, because both of you have to be on the same page with this. And then as you go through interview season, it's also important for your sanity to be honest with yourself. If you realize that you have nailed it at several of the programs that you really wanted to go to, if you know that you're just kind of being safe kind of at the end and getting those last interviews in, don't feel the need to do that. You don't want to waste your time. You don't want to waste the interviewer's time at the other programs. And you want to give your colleagues the opportunity to interview at places if they haven't had the opportunity to do so. So cancel. If you're going to cancel an interview, cancel with plenty of advance notice, and that enables your colleagues that chance.
Well, so I have a couple things to say. First, I learned so much about Stanford, and I should probably take a job there. Two, students, come to Stanford because, like, your program director is a Brit, and she'll say things like the Wiggles, and I love that. And to your point, I actually did not cancel my last interview, and it was Stanford. So who knew? Who knew? I almost canceled.
I'm not saying cancel your last interview.
No. I heard
best to last, but you want to be honest with yourself.
Yes, best to last is going to be a segue to our friend across the bay, Dr. Charlotte Wills, patiently waiting to tell us a little bit about, now you got to help me with this. Is it Alameda? Is it Highland? Just answer the question for all those East Coast people who have no idea what this is. Is it Highland?
Yeah, so it's the latest iteration is Alameda Health System, Highland Hospital. when I was a medical student applying Island, I almost threw away the letter of invitation because it said Alameda County Medical Center. So it's gone through a lot of iterations, but over its almost century of lifespan now, it is Highland. You will find it in the ARP, however, as Alameda Health System - Highland Hospital.
All right. Well, now that we know that, tell us your thoughts on what makes Highland great. It's a great program. I'd love to hear you tell us why.
Hospital for the Bay. Gigantic swath of land that we serve that goes from north of Berkeley all the way down to San Jose and then inland to the Altamont Pass. And we are the safety net hospital. We're also the only level one trauma center. We are a STEMI receiving center. And that's where you do the bulk of your training. And we are a little bit different than the other panelists' programs, because we are one of very few residency programs in the hospital. So similar to what Stacy was saying about the Fresno experience, that's Highland in spades. There's surgery, there's medicine, and pretty much else there's emergency medicine. So you really do have access to all the procedures and a wide variety of pathology. Now, that being said, we pride ourselves just not in producing one type of EM grad. We pride ourselves in training exceptional clinicians who are well prepared to go into any type of emergency medicine, whether it's fellowship, community, academics. And then we have any number of elective sites that you can rotate through, including Indian Health Services, so you get your rural experience too. And much like what Sarah was saying in terms of customizing your elective experience, that has always been our model at Highland, where we take the 5 months of elective time and really tailor it to what the individual's interests are. So, for example, we have one senior right now who's been working with a startup company, and her elective time is actually going to be spliced so she can continue working with that, and that may lead to what she does after graduation. We have other people that are splicing their elective time with ultrasound. We have another senior who is working on developing conferences in South America for teaching ultrasound in Spanish. So really, whatever your passion is, you can follow that. And getting back to the patient care, because the department really does live its mission statement, which is to serve the community in Oakland and East Bay, that really drives a lot of our research. So not being within a university, it really gives us a lot of freedom to choose there. And this is what's led to our department pioneering ultrasound, and then regional guided nerve blocks, and more recently, social emergency medicine and an opiate dependency bridge to buprenorphine clinic that is happening now from the department to an outpatient clinic. So it's that innovation that really is the hallmark of your Highland training too. And you will see this in what our alumni go out to do. And we have alumni who are program directors, working in the community, medical directors, global health leaders, researchers, Robert Wood Johnson scholars. We have somebody that was a White House fellow. We have somebody now at the World Health Organization. So that's really back to the testament of the flexibility and the general strength of training of your 4 years at Highland.
That was really well summed up, Charlotte. I also have to agree with you. Like, you guys cover so much breadth and depth of emergency medicine, have pioneered a lot of areas within EM, specifically ultrasound. But in case you guys didn't hear, because she broke up a little bit, because in addition to being PD, she's also super mom and unable to stop people from playing War of Worldcraft, is it? Anyway, you might have missed it, but apparently Highland covers the world. That's kind of the gist of her pitch right there. But let me give you a question just for all of those who are interviewing. You know, let's say you're like, I crushed that interview. Interview season is over. Is there anything else to do? Like, is there a post-interview etiquette that you advise your advisees to do after interview season?
Yeah, I think, you know, in the days of yore, it was buying the handcrafted stationery and writing a letter to everybody that had interviewed you. And I don't think in an age of emails, smartphones, I don't think that's necessary. So don't feel obligated to go out and find, you know, the perfect stationery. I do think it's completely reasonable to touch base with people that you connected with via email. That being said, it's good to be cognizant of the rules of the NRMP that have very strict guidelines about communication. So you as the applicant or the student should feel free to reach out to the program, but know that depending on the program's philosophy, you may or may not get a response. And what the program can say to you is very tightly regulated. Like, I cannot extract out of you as an applicant to my program any sort of indication about what you plan to rank us at. So if I say, hey, Michelle, what are you going to rank Highland at? That's a match violation. So many programs are pretty cognizant of this and will have little communication. On the other hand, it's fine for an applicant to say, hey, I loved your program. I'm going to rank you number one. just be aware that that's probably not going to affect your overall standing with that program, most programs. Maybe it will a little bit, but you should not bank on it. And the thing you don't want to do is go and promise like 6 different programs that they're number one, because it's a very small community. And if you get found out in that, it's like dating more than one person at the same time. It's just, don't do it.
Well, that is a great point to end on, Dr. Wills, is don't date more than one person. So
don't date more than one program. I'm going to leave that up to you, but don't date more than one program.
All right, there we go. So less lifestyle judging coming from our folks across the bay. So, hey, I've always been fans of Team Highland. You guys know that. And it's evidenced by, we've done enough EM Match Advice episodes now, Michelle, that here's some trivia. Highland is the only program now to have appeared twice in EM Match Advice. Look at that. That's how highly I think
know that.
Look at, gonna give you some sage advice here. All right. So we're gonna close instead, so usually we close with the commercials, but they came first. So we're gonna close with a less than 60 second round robin of quick myth busters. There's a lot of myths about matching to California. And I think our audience, specifically outside of California, would love to have a few of these myths busted. So this is how we're going to end our episode. We're going to go through 5 questions in sort of a quick round robin format. Certainly, I'm going to direct one question to each PD, but you guys can all chime in. Dr. Barnes, Mythbuster question number 1. Do you need to complete a California away rotation to match in the state of California?
That's a simple one, Mike. No. I think it certainly helps to get a sense of the geography and the program, especially if you're really interested in one of the programs and you want to do an audition rotation there. But we've had applicants from all over the country, in fact, all over the world. We've had residents from all over the country and all over the world. So there may be an opportunity for you as the applicant to get to know that program a little better and for the program to get to know you better. But I think that's a myth that we can bust right here.
Great. So you specifically don't care if their other letters are from outside California?
Absolutely not.
All right. That's another way to ask the myth. Excellent. Thank you. Dr. Fee, Mythbuster question number 2. So yeah, we take some students from outside California, but how many, right? So do California programs preferentially match California residents and students?
Mike, similarly, an easy no to that question. I think it's quite obvious if you look around the programs represented here. If you look at, check out their websites, look at where the current residents have come from. I think most of us list where our residents went for med school. It's a very easy way to disprove that myth in a very quick hurry. So our website has a map that shows all of our residents, where they came from and where our grads currently are. And a very clear look at the picture and you'll know the answer immediately.
Awesome. It's definitely a myth. All right. We're going to be moving a little bit from myths to stereotypes for Stacy Sottle. So stereotype buster, myth buster. I'm going to say that living in Fresno gets a bad rap, but let's fix that. Tell us a little bit about life in Fresno.
Mike, there is so much parking, You can park anywhere. It's free. It's amazing. There's no traffic. Your commute's going to be 15 minutes, in all the common areas to live. It's less than 15 minutes to get to work. And it's cheap to live here. So affordable. Tons of my residents buy homes. So it's really a nice place to live. It's easy. And that stuff, it's convenient, easy. I think that matters when you're a resident. You're really busy, doing other things and figuring out, how to be a doctor. So all of those things are, you can go to the DMV, you can go to Costco, Target, all in the same day. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. I was in the DMV for 4.5 hours on Monday and I thought, it's true. It's true. Yeah. All right. Sarah Williams, Dr. Williams.
It's also beautiful in Fresno.
All right. We're going to move to Mythbuster number 4, which is another kind of stereotype one and one that Stacy set you up for. Everybody said it.
So did you.
Right. So cost of living in the Bay Area is prohibitive for almost all students. Is that a myth?
I think it's a myth, although, it is true that this is an expensive place to live. It's an expensive place to live, just like Chicago's an expensive place to live, and Manhattan's an expensive place to live, just because of the population density and the fact that they tend to attract a relatively well-paid group of people to go live there. I think the institutions have really noticed how much of a struggle the residents were having. And I can speak for Stanford, and I think that UC has done something similar. They've really kind of jacked up the salaries to compensate. And they've also included a GME housing stipend every month, about $500. So about $6,000 on the year on top of the salary, on top of a moving allowance and really good benefits. So they've really tried to make it so that you can still afford a decent place to live, have a good lifestyle during residency. One of the really important things to consider is that a lot of people will use residency as their time to kind of start setting up the rest of their life. They're really going to start to make the contacts, the connections, start thinking about putting down roots at the place, oftentimes where they train. And so that's just another consideration to kind of get ahead of the game during residency. But yes, it's expensive, but I think that the programs have done a great job at meeting that challenge.
All right, excellent. And last round robin question, Dr. Wills, just how competitive is it to match to Northern California program? Let's say the myth is it's only the land of AOAs. Let's just take that myth off the table.
I will handily say it's not just the land of AOAs. I'll do sort of like a Google Earth from the 30,000 feet coming in. So there are about 1,800 U.S. grads who are going to, U.S. seniors who are going to come out, and 2,000 spots nationally. So every U.S. senior should land safely into a spot within the U.S. Now, if you go and break that down, though, only 290 of those spots, of those 2,000 spots, are here on the West Coast. And then counting up my colleagues' programs here, only then 68 of those spots are here in Northern California. But I think probably a lot of the people on this panel would agree with me that when we're looking at your file, it is not just about being AOA. It is not just about a board score. It's about you and everything that you've done. And yes, we want people that are academically qualified, but we also want people that are going to be able to take great advantage of the resources all of these programs have and really do something. So if you're not AOA, I would say all is not lost. Just with a cautionary note there that do not put all of your eggs in a West Coast basket. You want to be a little bit geographically diverse just because the math is slightly against you.
All right. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for all of the information about matching to the programs in Northern California. I learned a ton. Michelle, thank you for hosting.
Thank you for having us. I want to kind of leave with one note, which is for those of you who are listening on the podcast, you're not enjoying Dr. Williams' little banner that says "Live long and prosper." It's a perfect way to like end this podcast. I mean, way to go, Northern California.
And let's do it right now. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Emergency Medicine Match Advice. You can view any of our episodes for free on Allium's YouTube channel, or if you prefer, listen to the episodes as Allium podcasts on SoundCloud. Also, check out summaries of our episodes as blog posts on Allium.com and in the publication A User's Guide to the Allium EM Match Advice series in the June 2017 issue of the Western Journal of Emergency Medicine. We love to hear from our listeners. Post your questions or comments for any of our episodes on Allium.com. Thanks for joining us.